Hey everyone, welcome back to the Foul Hour. Today I'm joined by John Bresciani, but before we get started, gonna do a quick word from our sponsors, Skillshare. Yeah, so I've been going back through that Aaron Draplin course, the 21 tips for before, during, and after, making a logo and all the tips he has for his workflow. It's a great course. Get it on Skillshare and you can go and watch it right now with 2 free months using the link down in the description or by going to skl.sh/cfowlerdesign. You just sign up. You do have to put your credit card details in, but it doesn't take anything from it and you can cancel it at any time. So you get 2 free months of Skillshare to access any of their classes, basically across the board. Like, I'm super stoked, always stoked to have Skillshare as the sponsor for this show. I'm really excited for this conversation that I've had with John as well, because we cover a lot of topics and we actually find out kind of early on that we have very similar histories. We also have very many things in common, which it was a great conversation. And overall, I'm super happy to have met him. We've been following each other for a while and I really love the content that he puts out there. So without further ado, let me introduce you to John. Welcome back to the Foul Hour. Today, we're joined by John Bresciani from the Gold Coast of Australia. That was my best 9 a.m. Australian word, because that's all I can do. So welcome, John.
Thank you,
to
man.
The show today.
I really appreciate you having me, man. It's good to speak to you.
Yes, I've kind of been following you around for a little while. We've connected a few times on social, but it's nice to see your lovely face this morning, my time. But what is it? It's like super late in the evening for you now, is it?
No,
is it like
not super late. It's only 7 p.m. It only just got dark, actually, which is kind of funny. It's summer, so.
Oh, yeah, of course it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sat here. Because yeah. I completely forget this. I'm like, oh, yeah, in the UK, it's dark at like 3 p.m. at the moment.
Yeah, so. Yeah, right. I know what that's like. I lived in New York before, so I know when it gets dark at 4 and you're just like, oh, it's nighttime already.
Yeah, miserable for 6 hours before you go to sleep. But okay, John. For the people at home who may not know who you are, may not have seen you online, can you give us a bit of a brief overview of who you are and what you do?
Well, like you've introduced me very well, my name's John Bresciani and I'm a brand identity designer based on the Gold Coast in Australia. I've been doing that as a business privately for 3 years now. And I've been a graphic designer for 7, but most, I would say, working clients more so in the last 3 years. Like I mentioned before, I was a print machinist prior. So really as a working graphic designer, only the last 3 years. But I went to uni 7 years ago. So.
So did you study, you mentioned that you were in New York. Was that to study or was that as work? Or
no, well, oh God, it's a bit of a long story, but.
Well, we've got time, man.
Yeah, okay. No, cool. I'm originally from Brazil. I was born in Rio.
Right.
And cool. My mom lived in New York many years before I was born. So we went back and forth many times, me and her, as I was a child. Rio, New York, and predominantly Queens and Manhattan. And when I was around 8, we moved there permanently to Queens. And I resided there till about 14. In which case I left Queens, went back to Rio for a few years. And then when I was around 17, I made my way all the way here to Australia. And yeah, just went to high school here for like a year, which was funny. And then I just stayed, homie. I never went back home. And
you never left.
Never
yeah.
left. And then, legally, of course, if anyone was wondering, but I stayed here. And then around maybe 24-ish, I went to an informative night at my college, or what I heard was graphic design. I had no idea what it was. I was pretty creative prior with music and drawing and stuff like that. And then, yeah, just kind of like the lecturer there, he gave a really cool presentation about what graphic design is essentially. And there was this really cool thing about Paula Scher, how she did that Citibank logo on a napkin. And I was just like, whoa, this is dope. Like, I'm in. So I signed up for that. I It was a year long diploma of pre-printing and pre-press and graphic design, and they had a lot of cool letterpress wood type stuff there, which kind of led into me becoming a printer later on, because I just love having my hands with ink, as I'm sure you know. You were a screen printer. Not as hot as the screen printing room in there. It wasn't like that, but it was very creative in the sense where you could make crazy posters and am I going on for too long, by the way? Is this like boring?
Man, no, you keep going. This is great. Okay. I love this. I love hearing this stuff, because I have like no access to letterpress stuff, so I'm always intrigued by that process. So when you were kind of hooked on graphic design, then you did your diploma, and what was something that maybe you made back in college that you look back on now and go, I wish maybe I didn't do it this way, or that was really cool, or because obviously that passion sparked there, but it must have continued somehow.
Oh, where do I start? I mean, when you start doing graphic design, as you know, it's very like it's like this mysterious thing where you only really realize what you're doing later on, when you realize you're just simply serving someone for what they need, you know what I mean? Like, and you go in thinking that you're creative and this is creative and I can just be creative for money, right? Like, you know, but you learn as you go, obviously, as you know, everyone knows this. And, but what I mean with the printing was, they had, basically it was one of those roll-on presses where you set up a bunch of wood type and you put ink over it in this little roller. And then you just roll over this cool poster, and it's like the type is backwards. And then when you peel it off, you just got this mad, just beautiful. I've got some up here. I should have brought them to show you, but just cool textures. And then the guy who's a head lecturer there, he would say, "Why don't you put a picture on it?" And I'd have like Jimmy Page. You know, have you heard of Jimmy Page?
Yeah,
I'd have Jimmy Page with some cool stuff that he said, and it, you know, it was just all these crazy colors. And to answer your question, I think it kind of went full circle with what I'm doing now with type, and just how I had access to individual letters that were big and that were small, and little pieces of metal that you could put in and get all these textures. And I think that's how it went full circle for me in terms of an artistic inspiration as opposed to graphic design as a service. But it's cool. Like, I'm glad I did it that way, and I think that's what inspires what I'm doing at the moment, was just basically that inception of where I began with just type, really, I guess.
Yeah, physical layout design,
because, yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. I loved it.
Yeah, and as I say, I'm a big fan of your work and content that you put out onto Instagram and things, which is very heavy in type layout. It's very heavy in at the moment you're doing things like combining abstract elements with different type layers, and you can see that you're clearly very good with type. And it's really interesting to hear that you actually started with physical type, with physical letters, with physical wood blocks and ink and all of that type of stuff, because I think the people who I've spoken to who have had that opportunity in the past are always leagues ahead in terms of layout skill, and have a greater awareness of typography than, say, I do, because whilst I could potentially have had access to that at some point in my education, I either didn't know about it or it just wasn't available. And I look at type now and I'm like, damn, how the hell does John do this? Like, but at the same time, I think it's such an important skill to have that I think many people, especially within my audience, are just not keenly aware of at all. So they can make a beautiful icon, they can make a beautiful pattern or a color palette, but the second you give them some letters, it's like they're trying to type with Comic Sans again.
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying, because I feel like even though I had that start with it, I was very much so unaware of how to even lay out type as a working graphic designer. So I completely hear what you're saying, because it sounds exactly what I was like. You might really enjoy this, actually. The way that I had, like I said, I had all that access to like individual letters and stuff, and that definitely, that helped me create really crazy, wacky stuff. But it was when I did, I had a few books on type and a lot of stuff that was very basic and basic rules of typography and stuff. But it was when I did Chris Doe's Typography 01 course that I kind of started mixing like grid with just a creative sort of way, like just thinking about letters in an individual format, as opposed to like when we type it out today in a type box, we have a word and such. But yeah, I mean, if you think that that's something you'd like to learn, man, I'm pretty sure you would absolutely love that course. I couldn't recommend.
Man, I have that course.
You have it?
I have it. It's just one of those things. It's like I've got a bunch of them. And as part of the Young Guns thing, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway because it's all over and done with. They were kind enough to gift us some of the courses.
Oh, yes, nice.
So I picked up a few of those. And Typography 01, I'll put a link for anyone listening in the description. No, you're not listening in the description. The link will be in the description for listeners for that course, so you can go and check that out. But so we kind of established where you've kind of come from with design. But as I said, as you mentioned at the top of the show, and as I saw in your bio, you also were a print machinist for a while, or at some point in your career. So where did that come in between? Because you say you've been doing design for like 3 years and 7 years, 3 years client work or something like that, and 7 years in total. So where's the in-between there of being a print machinist, and what does that actually entail for people who might not know?
Okay, so around 2013, I graduated as a graphic designer. And I kind of went like, you know, when you finish school and you're like, I'm going traveling. So I went traveling for like a few months, and then I came back and I needed a job. So, you know, no graphic design jobs around. I mean, I don't know what it's like in England, but on the Gold Coast, it's pretty scarce for, I'm sure you've talked to Frank. He's well aware of what it's like, here when you graduate. But anywho, I just needed a job, and, there was this print, flexo printing. Have you heard of flexographic printing before? Like label printing?
I have heard of it, but I can't tell you very much about it. So
yeah, no, that's cool. I had, before I went overseas, I had an interview there for a graphic design job, but I kind of said, oh, look, guys, like, I can start in like a few months, but I'm going away. As you can imagine, that just went, they just said, see ya. No, we don't have any. But when I came back, the guy who had interviewed me, he really liked my attitude, and he said, well, look, we don't have a graphic design job, but we have a printing apprenticeship open for you if you want it, like we really liked you and stuff. And I was like, I looked at my girlfriend and I said, man, I think I'm just gonna take this because I love printing, I've always wanted to get into it. And I did, and it was really hard. I mean, I just got thrown into the deep, and as you know, the print room can just burn a lot of molecules in your head, and really frustrating. Basically, a manual.
What was the day to day like? Yeah, sorry, I was going to ask, what's the day to day like with that kind of job?
Yeah, so like lunch break while you're working, no lunch break, standing up all day, as you know, printing. You know, the jobs need to get done. It's industry, a big, what's called an inline press. So you got one 250 mil sheet of paper around this wide, and it just runs into like 7 units of color. So you got your process colors, your CMYK, and then your couple of spot colors, and then a varnish as well, and matte laminate, gloss laminate, all of it. But this press was very manual, and it was out of line, and it was old, and it was very hard for me to get in touch with it, because it was just, man, I mean, you know, room temperature affects ink. Ink starts to dry up and get thick, and you need to, you know, make it wetter, and you need to mix ink as you're printing because you're running out of spot color ink. So you need to mix it with other colors, and you're on a tie. And it's just like a madhouse. But ironically, I loved it. I mean, it was really quick, really fast paced, a lot of pressure. But the guy I was working with, who's actually a dear friend of mine to this day, he taught me everything. And so I did that till about, I want to say 2017. And then I quit my job. because I was, after a while, I just, I'd finished my apprenticeship and they were kind of positioning me to be a head printer. And the guy that trained me, he kind of wanted to go into like a business area where he would source out new clients. And I was basically taking over his responsibility, which I was just like, oh my God, I'm like, I'm never going to leave this print room ever again. Like, you know, and I kind of just thought about it and I still really love graphic design. And I kind of just said, man, I appreciate it, guys. And I finished my apprenticeship, but I just kind of bounced after a while. And that's a really long story. I'm sorry to bore you with it, but it's just
it's not boring, man. It's really interesting. I like hearing those kinds of stories because it's a similar thing to what happened to me with the screen printing one. But I see what you're saying. When you go into that world of, because my question was going to be, were you still doing design stuff kind of on the side? Were you still messing around with posters and graphics and things like that while you were working in the print shop, or did they just clash too much?
They clashed purely because it's just a lot of work, Connor. Like, it was just a lot of hours. You just get home and you're just exhausted. And after a day like that, I couldn't bring myself to want to design. I did a few projects, like, you know, a friend here, you know, a family member there, like things like that. But I wasn't working as a graphic designer, and I hadn't for a while, and I hadn't really even been in Adobe for a long time, you know what I mean? But I still had graphic design in my mind. It's kind of like when you go to school, everything like, you know, pre-press and how to create logos, how to create identities, all that stuff still stays in your brain somehow. I'm not sure how, but all that ideology and process and all that stuff still stays in there, and you're walking around and you see signs and you internally judge identities without anyone hearing and, you know, stuff like that. But no, I wasn't working as a graphic designer really until I quit my job.
Yeah, that sounds very much like my experience working at the screen printers, because I did the similar thing. I did not a full-on apprenticeship. It wasn't technically an apprenticeship, but it basically was me following this my boss, one guy. But it was the same thing. It was secondhand old equipment.
Yeah.
The belt, like, it was a tiny, tiny room in like a converted, like, we have a bunch of forts in the UK that are just disused now.
Yeah.
So they convert them into like warehouse business space. So it was in one of those tiny places, which meant it was damp in the winter. It was freezing cold in the morning. And then you have a belt dryer running at something like 100 degrees, if not hotter, in a tiny room in secondhand equipment. And it would just be days, man. Like, exactly as you're describing, like, ink would be dried out. Something would be more wet than it should be. There'd be fluff everywhere. There'd be static from t-shirts. You'd have a moment of doing things like, oh, I'm mixing color. And something would fall off the ceiling. Like, it was just gross and horrible in there. And you'd be like, well, that's fucked.
Yeah.
And even down to things like putting a shirt through the belt and you're like, cool, I'm happy with this. And then the belt just eats it and just melts the whole t-shirt.
Just goes off the side, kind of.
Yeah, and it's just like, excellent. So, but I completely understand what you're saying, especially when you're having to deal with not just a fast-paced environment, but one that can change so rapidly.
Yeah.
And can just go wrong in like very, very quickly. And for people who haven't ever worked in that kind of more industrial environment, whether it's for print or even just factory settings, trying to make things or build things, particularly when it's a client piece and you have only so much wiggle room to make mistakes, if you mess up an entire, like, I don't know, maybe 10 of 50 t-shirts because the belt dryer just keeps eating them and it's not even something you can do, well, then that's a huge chunk of the profit just disappeared. And obviously, as an apprentice, you get all the flack for it.
That's right. It's the same thing with me for paper, man. It was the same thing, you know. And we would have however many, I don't know if you had this too, but they would keep track of it. I'm sure they kept track of how many t-shirts you fucked up. So for me, it was like however many meters of paper that I wasted. And I was just like, John always wasted more paper, you know, because I was always way more. Not experience, but it's funny. This is really cool, man, because the guy who taught me, he came up as a screen printer too. And he got into flexo printing later and did his apprenticeship in that. But prior, he always told me stories about screen printing and how hot it was in there. And it's just like, I can hear what you're saying, and it just reminds me of all the stories he would tell me too. So that's quite interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I love screen printing. Unfortunately, the downsides for it are things like it's screaming hot in there. The only places I've ever been where it's not been stupidly hot, they've either had a warehouse with like a two-story garage door, and they've just left it open the entire day, even in the winter. But more often than not, if you're doing this stuff by hand without fancy equipment, it's going to be hot, it's going to be sweaty, it's going to be a real tedious moment to try and print 500 t-shirts by hand with two or three colors. Like, it's slow, hard work, same as it would have been for the print, the paper print stuff you were doing. But it's very rewarding. I just realized very quickly that the actual process of printing it was, I loved it, but I also kept having to print people's really shitty t-shirts.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which just made me really upset. Yeah. And I was like, I don't like my boss. He's not very nice. He doesn't really know how to run his business at all. I've learned how to do the skill, and I'm having to print people's awful designed t-shirts. It's like,
were you a, great. Were you a designer prior to, or was that after?
So I first did and first opened Adobe Illustrator to make a logo for my band.
Oh, really?
When
band
I was like
too?
Yeah, 15 or 16. And I opened Adobe. So basically, I spent every single day in college. So UK college is like the last 2 years of high school.
Yeah.
And those 2 years, I basically failed almost all my subjects. But I learned how to use Adobe Illustrator because I'd spend all my free periods, and I got it at home, and I was playing with it around at home, and I'd use it on the library computers. And that's how I just, because I went back and actually found that file because I thought I'd lost it. One of the first files I've ever had of Adobe Illustrator. And you go, if you just press like Command Y and just put it in outline mode, holy like man, it's so bad. I have no idea how those t-shirt printers worked with that logo, but they, but yeah, that's how I got into it. I started making stuff for my band because no one else knew how to.
Yeah.
And I knew Photoshop wasn't going to be good enough. So.
Yeah, that's so cool, man. Wow, man, we have.
Were
so
you in a
much
band as well? Then?
Yeah, I was in a band. I was in a band before I did graphic design. A 70s rock, 80s rock, just had super long hair and just like, you know, the whole thing.
Well, you did.
I did. Yeah, I did. And
nice.
Super into it, and had a band. It was awesome. Like we played a bunch of shows and, you know, tried to spread the legs and play solos and act like Jimmy Page and all that bullshit. And that was cool. Really loved it.
Did you play guitar then?
I played guitar. Yeah, I still play guitar.
Mm. Yeah. So were you the guy at the front with the very open shirt, some lovely sparkles all over it, and some like super flared jeans? Was that you?
I didn't have the flared jeans. I had a semi-open button-up shirt. I did, because, you know, let's be honest, you want to kind of be sexy when you're on stage. Let's, you know,
you got to try.
We're friends here. We got to try. But yeah, man, just like the Les Paul and the Marshall, and it was a fun time. Like I really enjoyed it, and like all things, you kind of, you know, you realize how much work it takes to make a rehearsal and make an album, which we eventually did kind of record a mini EP. But you know, it kind of just fades away, you know, a little bit, and I just play now for fun, and I actually bought a Strat recently that I can't wait to get in the mail, so I'm pretty excited. But I'm curious to hear about your band too.
Yeah, so I played in a band that was kind of, or how would I describe this? It was more leaning towards, well, originally we were like, oh, we'll just be like kind of a light metal hard rock band.
Yes.
And then my friend Paul started getting into making electronic music and started learning about synths and all this type of stuff, and I could play guitar, but I was never incredible. So it was myself, and I did all the electronics and all the synth work. My friend Owen was a guitarist, and he's still the best guitarist I've ever met. And Tom, our drummer, we picked up this, like, we were in year 10, year 11. So we were like 15, 16.
Nice.
And this drummer kid from like year 8, so he must have been 14, 15. Like must have been 14. But he was insane. And he's now gone on to record music at Abbey Road and all that type of stuff as well.
That's beautiful.
And so the kind of me being like, I can make weird noises with synths.
Yeah, I know.
But we basically ended up kind of forming like an Enter Shikari hardcore with electronic synthy stuff, kind of a bit more modern punk.
Okay.
Is kind of what I describe it as.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
But we did that for a while. We never went anywhere hugely like performance wise, but we had some reputation locally, which is pretty good. But it was more just a case of like, we want to try this and see if it works. But as you say, like when you get to university and all that type of stuff, that has to take priority. So
yeah,
it kind of fades away from there.
That's awesome, dude. That's so cool. We got so much in common, man. It's been a really good chat. Yeah, that's how it goes. And again, like that local, that bit of local notoriety is kind of like the funnest part about it. Like I would rather just keep it at that and then never have done anything further, because it's kind of like your friends like it and, you know, like you play a show and then just basic stuff, really. Not really. I'm glad we never really tried to. I've just turned 30 this year. I wouldn't want to be doing it now, trying to be a musician and all that. Glad I just kind of let it go a few years ago and just kind of like do it for the love of it. I actually had a long break playing guitar. I hadn't played for a few years and I kind of just picked it up again recently, you know, so it's been fun. Yeah,
playing guitar is such a nice, because Bless does it as well. Bless Createx plays guitar as well.
Oh, nice.
And it's always interesting talking to him about it, because it's more a case of like, it's just a different way to use creativity. And it's not often I run into people who are creative in multiple aspects.
Yeah.
So I, obviously we both did music and then moved into design and then da, 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 da. But when you can kind of have two or more touch points in different creative fields, it's definitely a good way to, I think, flex your creativity a little bit to kind of just put it somewhere else. And then let your brain kind of figure out the other problems and then come back to it.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny you say that, because anyone who's a creative that I meet and that I figure out later on that they played music, I always have this chat to them, like that the sensibility of, like, for example, learning how to figure out notes by ear, and just that personal feeling that you have with an instrument, is kind of like very close to how when you would dive into branding or something like that, where you kind of have to have a feel for things. And I always compare the two very closely. And it's interesting you mentioned that. And it's funny. I mean, I feel like everyone that is a graphic designer or an artist in general that play music, they have that same sort of connection with whatever instrument they're playing and whatever creative work they're doing too. And it's great that you mentioned that again.
Yeah. You learn to trust your gut, don't you?
Yeah, you really do, don't you? Especially, this is probably like the people listening to this probably have no idea what I'm talking about, but like when you listen to like a Paul Kassoff vibrato as opposed to someone like Zach Wilde or something, you know, it's completely different. But like hearing the difference and trying to play them, that's where it really you start to feel close to the instrument. I think that's the similar thing with when you're in a meeting with a client or a call like we're doing now, and we're trying to sort of like get these little indications of what sounds right to them and what they're kind of still not super sure about. I think for me anyway, I think that's like that's always been very apparent. And yeah, I think the two are definitely interconnected for sure, in some way. But that's too hokey with it.
Yeah, something I think also with musicians is you have to fail so much to be a musician. Like to get one riff right, to learn the most basic riffs on guitar before you even start talking about solos or anything like that, it takes hours and hours and hours and hours of practice. And you will fail a lot more than you'll get it right. And I think it also sets people up kind of have that discipline.
Yeah.
Of the same way martial arts does, but if we keep it strictly creative, I think music is probably the best way to do that.
Have you done martial arts as well?
Yeah, I'm a black belt in karate.
Man, I feel like, bro, now I'm starting to think like you're like this distant cousin or something, because I am also into martial arts too.
What would you do?
After a while, like, I hate repeating, but it's like, yeah, I did Muay Thai for a long time too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez, that's pretty hardcore stuff, I've got to say.
Yeah, I mean, going back,
where did you do that? Did you do that in Australia?
Yeah, I did it in Australia. Yeah. I did a bit of jiu-jitsu too, but more, I fell in love with Muay Thai a bit more, and had been training when I was working as a printer. And when I quit my job, I actually went to Thailand for 2 months with my girlfriend, just trained Muay Thai in Thailand for 2 months. And because I wanted to go there, because that's where it originates, you know, like that's where the really good guys are. And yeah, I mean, I was looking to kind of maybe do an amateur fight or two, and then dude, like I just I'm 6'4", I'm a large human, but like I was sparring with a couple of dudes there that were like 6'7" and like legit beasts, and just getting uppercutted into oblivion, and you know, getting my head shaken. And I was kind of like, okay, I'm not a fighter, like I'm really love martial arts for training, but you know, I think I'm just gonna like call it a day here, where training meets, and that's it. Like, enough training is more than enough for me. So,
what's the system in Muay Thai? Is it a belt system, or is it?
There's no real system. Some people have systems, like where they put like a different color thing around your upper bicep here. But I never had that. Right. Like the Thais never really had that either. I did join a gym here in Australia where they did kind of do that, but that was more like to, you know, because in Western culture, they kind of need that sort of like hint of a belt system, as you know, for people to keep coming back and stuff like that. But in Thailand, like, they don't do that. They just, if you can get some, you can get some. And if you can't, you just don't, you know?
Yeah, these are the basics you start with, and we'll tell you when you're ready, basically.
Yeah, yeah. It was really cool, man. But it's interesting. I love karate too. I love that guy, Wonder Boy Thompson. He's awesome. He's a big karate guy. GSP, you know, those guys. So, yeah, it's cool. But you're definitely a distant cousin, man. Like, seriously, it's getting a bit funny now. You're like my white cousin, bro. Distant white cousin. It's hilarious.
Yeah, well, I'm very, very white. We can say that much. But...
Tell me about your karate, man.
That's super cool. Yeah, so I did karate. I started just as I went into secondary school, so I would have been 12 or 13.
Yeah.
And by the time I was 17, just almost 18, I got my black belt. And it's a very strict system. And basically, when I got to black belt, they kind of changed the rules. And they were like... it used to be that you would have to wait like 4 years to get your second black belt,
yeah,
your second Dan. But then they made it 7 years to be your second Dan. You had to like swap out with other people in the rank in this organization. So I was quite lucky with the organization that I was with, because the head guy was originally trained in Japan and then came back and set up this organization.
Yeah.
So I was quite lucky there, but I also taught it. So when I got to black belt, obviously, you know, everything for all the other belt. So to get free classes to all my lessons, I just taught people for like, so it was like a 3-hour, 4-hour session.
Wow,
and I
that's
just
really
teach
long.
For the first 2 hours. But it was a lot of fun. I don't do it anymore, just because I was like, I can't wait 7 years to do the next thing. Like, there's just not enough for me to learn. Because the black belt stuff to learn, you could perfect it, you could get it perfect. I could go train and hit all these targets every single time if I wanted to. But that would only take me 1.5 to 2 years.
Yeah.
And then there's another 5 years of just... kind of milling around, and I was like, I'm so not into that. But I do love it. I love the discipline. I love the ability to go in every week and there's no judgment of who you are, what you've been doing that week, where you're from. We're all here to do the same thing. And when your instructor says, you do 30 push-ups, you do 30 push-ups. Or when he's like, right, everyone, Connor's messed this up too many times, like, you all got push-ups. But it helps. Like, I think it's definitely shaped the person I am today, for sure.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's really cool, man. I agree. Especially on the part about how many different styles of people you meet. And I mean, it's a humbling experience, you know, getting punched in the face and whatever. But you're totally right. And the discipline of it definitely, I think, plays a big part in your career as a, you know, for us as a graphic designer, but I'm assuming everyone that does it in their career too. Like you said, if someone messes up, you do push-ups, you do sit-ups and all that kind of stuff. And very humbling, very cool. Was it like a Kyokushin karate or?
Oh man, I'd have to go and get my membership book to check. But I think so, yeah. It's been like 4 years since I went.
Yeah.
But yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, cool.
I just remember, because I didn't do any like, we did sparring, we did like competition-esque type fights internally.
Yeah.
And there were camps you could go to in the summer to do that kind of thing. But I remember, how old was I? I must have been a brown belt. So I must have been like 16. But our instructor did this really horrible thing one week. He was like, right, there's one person in the middle. You've all got sparring pads on, so you've got like light guards. But one person's in the middle and then you're surrounded by eight people and just go.
Great.
And I distinctly remember there weren't too many people older than I was because I joined the organization when my instructor started teaching.
Yeah.
So we were like one of the older groups in there, but there were some adults and stuff. But I distinctly remember being in the middle and getting smacked around the face a few times because I just couldn't keep up fast enough. And then this one kid who I really hated in the class, he just like, he tried to come in and I just stamped my foot really hard on the ground and was like rucked up right up against him. And he screamed and like fell backwards. And I remember that so distinctly. But man, like, yeah, you're totally right. And I think people underestimate the ability of these transferable skills because, as you say, it's very humbling to be around people who you don't know, who have maybe better or worse skills than you, or to try and teach them, or going to Thailand, as you say, and seeing that whilst you've done it one way, there may be a different way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, man, I got my ass whooped by people like half my size, like small dudes, you know, and that's humbling, man. You know, you're a big dude your whole life, and then some little guy just comes up and just goes pop 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 on your face, and you're just like, yo, like I can't believe you just did that, you know. But it's a beautiful thing. I always said that if more people did martial arts, I think there would be so much less like aggression in the world, because you know, you just kind of like, I know you know this because you've done it, but when there's this internal thing with males when you don't fight and you don't get in there and get dirty with people frequently like you do when you're doing training, you think that you kind of can fight. And then all of a sudden when you have a little bit of experience and you've trained for a bit, you realize how dangerous it is when you get into a fight on the street and how dumb it is, and you know, how dangerous really it is. You know, someone falls and hits their head, like it's not like in the movies, you know, and it's way more humbling. I really believe it in my heart that if more people did it, there'd be way less fights on the street, it'd be way less everything aggression wise yeah, because people would just, yeah, like, man, and that's probably like the contrary to what some people would believe, I'm assuming. But I think I'm trying to act like I'm a badass, because I'm really not. But I remember when I was training more often, which I'm not anymore, I would just feel like, man, I would never have a fight on the street ever. I mean, it's stupid. Like, you know, it's really like you get that aggression out at the gym and then you never feel like you need to be aggressive towards anyone, really.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, I agree with you, because Well, have you kind of to dive more away from design and stuff? Because I think this is an important topic to talk about in terms of things you do outside of design. Because whilst being creative is one thing, you've got to have some history or experience that shaped that. Have you ever had a close encounter like that on the street?
I actually have.
If you don't.
I have.
If you don't mind talking about it.
And it was before martial arts. And that's why I say it from personal experience, because it was just so dumb. You know, it's just so... Like after it, and I don't know if you have, but after it, you just feel really dumb inside. Like you feel like, why did that even happen? Like I am not an aggressive person. And I think that sensibility of realizing how quickly things can get out of hand, and you're just like, man, I mean, there's no need for this. I'm going to train martial arts. And when I did, man, I just legitimately like, and I still watch stuff like the UFC. It's really aggressive stuff, but it's like, man, there's so much respect in it. I mean, it's like what martial arts is really is, you know, you just respect everyone. And yeah, I mean, I'm assuming people are going to listen to this podcast and go, this is not a design podcast.
No, oh, it doesn't matter. I don't care. Sorry, that much. It's my show. It's my show, man. Like I'm more interested in hearing about you as a person and stuff.
But hey, if you're cool with it, you know?
Yeah, 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 totally. Speaking of the UFC though, I literally saw a clip. It must've been a couple of days ago. I don't know who these guys are, so I won't be able to tell you, but one of the guys did a spinning hook kick. And the other dude he was fighting ducked under it and like clocked him as the kick went over his head. And then they bounced back up. He kind of caught his breath and then they like high-fived because he was like, that's nice. Like, well done. Like in the middle of the ring, in the middle of this fight.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's what it's about. As vicious as like the fights actually are, the people partaking in them are generally very well disciplined.
Yeah.
What's not, and what makes UFC seem so violent and angry in my perspective, is the audience. Is everyone in that audience going, because everyone who has no training is like, yeah, like smash him up. Like, yeah, I could do that. Like, yeah, fight, fight, fight. And it's like, you could barely punch a potato.
Yeah.
Like,
that's probably right.
Because as I say, just to kind of level out your story as well, I had a similar encounter where it must have been, oh, it was over a year, maybe almost 2 years ago at this point. But I was out at a local bar/club with my girlfriend and some of her friends. And there were these two dudes like just scoping like round the bar, just really creeping.
Yeah.
And you could see that's what they were doing because they were literally stood there like pointing at girls they wanted to go and talk to. And I was like, and one of my girlfriend's friends leaned over to me and was like, this is really creepy. Like, can we move? And I was like, okay, well, I'll just go foolishly because I was like, these are reasonable people. Like, I'm a reasonable person. So I went up to them and was just like, can you like stop? If you want to do this, like do it not in the middle of the dance floor. Do it like somewhere else and just let everyone enjoy their night. And I was like, hope you have a good night, man. But I really don't want to see you around here. Like, come on.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's creepy. You're creeping people out. And obviously they took offense to that. And this guy who was, because I'm 6'1", he must have been like 5'8", 5'9". Didn't Bad. Like at all dude talking to him. And obviously he went away and then continuously tried to get my attention for an hour. And then basically was trying to square up in the club. And I was like, can we just leave? Because I really don't want to smash this guy's face up. Like I really, but I also knew that he wasn't the only person there. Because no dude goes to the club by themselves.
Yeah.
And as I'm sure you're aware with martial arts, that you do not one-on-one. Like, you will lose. Like, almost always you will lose. Someone will come get you.
Yeah.
You have to be extraordinarily, like, incredible at your skill to be able to do two-on-one or even... Because it makes it, like, you watch, like, Steven Seagal in a movie with eight people, and it's like, no, he'd be dead by now.
He'd be dead seven times by now.
Yeah, he'd be dead. So we left this club, went to the local kebab shop, like, down the road, and one of these dudes, not the guy who was annoyed at me, but one of his mates walked into the kebab, and I was, like, in a tiny little kebab shop with one exit, and it's like, right, we need to leave now. No. And I was like, I'm really sorry, girls. I know you've eaten your food. We need to leave now. And literally 10 seconds after we left, their whole group of eight came down. And this guy who was annoyed at me was like,
yeah.
I just ignored him. I just pretended he didn't exist. But he was like, I'm showing John. He must have been like two or three foot away from me, like trying to ogle me out, trying to glare me out. And I was like, man, I know I could floor you, but it's just not worth it because all these girls that I'm with might get hurt.
Yeah.
And it's one of those moments, as you say, where you look back on it and you go, I really wish I hadn't done that, because you don't realize how quickly things can escalate. And it's like, I know that I could have defended myself. I could have dealt with this dude. But at the same time, it was 8v1, because that's what would have happened.
Yeah, terrible.
And then also I'm with like my girlfriend and five other girls who don't have any training of any kind.
Yeah.
So what are they going to do? Fortunately, we kind of just left the situation quickly and it was fine. But it's still something I think about to this day, because it's like, if I didn't have any martial arts training at all, I wouldn't have known when to stop. But then I also probably wouldn't have thought I could have done that. So it's a weird mix, but I completely agree. To just kind of build on your story, is that when you have that level of discipline, it shows you, obviously there will be moments, I was 3 pints in, like I wasn't fully aware of what I was doing. But when you are in that situation, you can see it and go, obviously we're talking about a fight situation, like an extreme situation. You can look at it and go, this is not good. Although I could handle this, I'm just going to walk away, because it's just not worth the effort. Yeah. And someone's going to get hurt.
Yeah, man. It's a dangerous scenario. I had a friend who was a black belt too in jiu-jitsu, and he worked at a nightclub as a bouncer, and he just tell me all these stories. And you know, people break schooners and try and cut you, or they, you know, hit you over the head with something, or someone gets, you know, knocked out because they just get like this big overhand somewhere that just comes out of nowhere and then hits his head, has really bad brain damage. Like it's just stupid. Like, you know, and it's really good the way you handle it, man. You handle it like a champ. Like, that's what you're supposed to do. You know, you're just supposed to say, look, I just want to have a good night with all these girls. Maybe you should go find some girls. I don't know. You know, like, you know, and it's silly, man. And I mean, not to sound like a boring dude, but that's kind of like why I don't even go out clubbing anymore. I mean, I'm kind of older now, but I kind of don't.
Man, you're 30. I'm not that old.
I feel old. I did a lot of partying, like when I was, how old are you, for example?
I'm 24, almost 25.
Yeah, I mean, from like 20 to like 27, I just like fucking, yeah, I had my fun. But and not to say, again, not to say that I don't, you know, do stuff or that I'm boring, but like that kind of stuff does put you off sometimes, you know, like, and it happens a lot here in Australia too, as I'm sure it does in the UK. Like,
yeah, it happened a lot in London when I lived in London. Yeah. Like it was very difficult sometimes to not step in.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny you say the kebab shop. It's like it, for some reason it always happens near a pizza shop or a kebab shop, you know.
It's because everyone's hungry. They're just agitated. They're drunk and they're agitated.
I remember you were in that club, you know, stuff like that. But funny then.
So kind of swinging that maybe a bit more around towards the designy side of that.
Yeah.
We were talking kind of, I made a comment earlier about it being more about gut feeling, particularly with a music background and things like that. So when you go into your branding projects with clients, do you feel that all these experiences up to this point have helped shape your process? Because I talk to people who have no idea about their process or where to start learning. But obviously the experience you've had as a musician and then obviously through martial arts as well, do you think that's helped shape the process you have today rather than just, say, reading a design book?
I think if I had to, like, analyze it as a whole, maybe. But consciously, while you're going, I don't think you really realize it. I think maybe it does, surely. But, you know, while you're doing it and, you know, you're on the move and you're making stuff. I don't think consciously, but I think it must, because, and it's funny, my girl always says that she's like, you are like a product of your you know, your past and all the stuff that you do. And like, and I'm like, really? Like, and I'm like, yeah, it, you know, maybe it is, like, I don't know. But to answer your question, not consciously, but I think if I had to like analyze it as a whole, maybe, yeah, maybe for sure.
Yeah. And because one of the topics I wrote down for notes in the show for people listening at home, on John's bio, you've mentioned you've worked with clients from kind of all around the world, including places like China, which is interesting to me because I was literally talking to Bless about this yesterday, about the differences in culture and from east to west in terms of cultural side. Obviously, Australia is kind of in between. But yeah. when it comes to working with clients from different places, different cultures, maybe if you have a specific story, that would be amazing to hear. But just how do you go into that kind of conversation? Has there ever been either not cultural clashes, but just differences of opinion or thought on the way things should be done?
Culturally, I'm sure there is a story. I think if we use the China client, for example, I guess like maybe the creative has less say in things, and you know the story, like you know, creativity is more like art. Again, this is prevalent in most cultures where graphic design is seen as a form of art and not so much something that could actually generate a actual return over the course of however many years they're in business. But I guess I don't think I've noticed it. Like, I think I might have remembered if it was definitely a cultural difference. I guess maybe just like chatting to them was kind of hard because the English barrier might have been a little bit like, but not overly, man. Like, I guess maybe like my process has changed over the course of how long I've been doing it, but I think if you kind of stick to your process every time, the outcome, the chats and the negotiation part and the presentation parts are kind of like similar as long as you stay in your process. I think so. I mean, for me anyway.
Yeah, that's great to hear though. It's good to hear that whilst technology allows us to work with everyone, you've not run into too many problems, because I've definitely had that in the past where I've had maybe a client from Japan or a prospect from Japan, should I say, contact me, and I know immediately that it's going to be a challenge to communicate. And as horrible as it might sound, part of my process is speaking to people on the phone. And if we're having to exchange emails through Google Translate and they don't speak any English, that's exceptionally difficult.
Yeah.
So what I do is, some people would say, oh, well, you should try and work with them. You should try and make the best out of it. I'm like, no, because I can't serve them correctly. So what I did instead was I sent them an email and said, this is going to be difficult because I like to speak to people on the phone. But what I am going to do for you is find you a Japanese designer.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And they sent me an email back and they said, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, you sound like you nailed it on the head, really.
Yeah,
trying to do your job is hard enough, let alone not be able to speak the language. But I've had like certain language barriers, but not bad enough, at least in my experience so far, where I've had to kind of I'm sure if it was something like that where they didn't speak the language at all, I would have definitely been like, look, I mean, it's hard enough convincing you to like something when you speak English. You know,
I don't
honesty.
Even have the words to do it in English, guys. How do you expect
I don't
me to
even
do this?
Have the words in English. That's it. Yeah, but no, man, like a little bit, but that's an interesting story. I mean, I've never thought about it that way, but yeah, I mean, if the English barrier is too high, again, I would recommend, just like as you have, just maybe you know, moving along and finding something better. So
yeah, I think it's an important thing to have in your kind of, not your rule book, but just to know when maybe it's better off to pass it to somebody else, because you don't want to struggle for yourself, but you also don't, you also want to make sure that that person gets the best work. Like, there's enough work in the world. Like, at the moment, I would say I probably refer more jobs on than I take on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not because I'm picky. That's not because I'm like overly picky. It's not because I'm stubborn about who I work with. It's more because I want to make sure that the people on the other end get what they need. And I'm very self-aware enough to be like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to lie about it.
Yeah, you're a professional. That's what you got to do. So, again, if anyone's listening, I definitely follow what Connor's saying, because I definitely say no a lot more than I used to, man. I mean, and to pick up on what you said too, which is interesting, when you started chatting to them, you already knew that certain, you know, is going to be difficult. I've had that. I don't want to come out to sound like I've had a perfect client experience my whole career. I really haven't. But you kind of definitely pick up on those little intricacies where you go like, okay, this person is definitely difficult to deal with. I can tell. I might just say, look, this isn't good for me. I actually recently I had a lady from here around our local area, and she was releasing this book in January, and it was just like a massive job. And I was just like, you pick up on their energy and how they're saying things, and you know that it's not going to be worth your while. And you kind of just say, which I am actually at the moment, I'm on holidays. So I'm like, no, thank you.
We are closed for business hours, as in, I close my office door.
Close my door in your face only. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of kind of, you're on Christmas break, are you now?
I had to, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think. Burnt out.
Yeah, I think at this point in the year, a lot of people are. I'm stopping work on Monday. So the 23rd officially.
Yeah,
well, actually, it's kind of technically this week, but I've got a couple things I'm doing just because they're already booked in. So I'm like, man, it's fine, yeah. Deal with it. But to kind of like lean towards the last thing I want to talk about before we wrap up the show, you, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I really like your Instagram content, John.
Thanks.
And as I've said on Twitter and multiple other places, you're one of my favorite people to look at for like, I hate putting it under this umbrella term, but it's carousel type content where we're telling a story through a series of slides, like a mini deck or a micro blog type thing. And yours account was one of the first I found for that type of content. And it's only improved, but it's improved in a completely opposite direction to where everyone else seems to have gone. But I didn't particularly want to ask you about why do you do carousel content? What I'm more interested in is why, or what you're interested is in sharing these stories, because not only are you just titling really great advice in here, but you're putting in some of your stories. I mean, I'm looking at your most recent post, which you can find on John's Instagram account. You were talking about your maths teacher and all the different stories that go along with that. And I think that really resonates with people, along with the really nice piece of design you put out there. And it doesn't feel like you're trying to like shove teaching down people's throats, but you're just trying to be helpful. So have you always kind of wanted to be this sharing your knowledge type person? Or is this just something that's kind of built up over time?
Great question, man. So the way it started really was around April this year, like mid-April. And I basically got like this really just kind of this aha moment where I saw Christo say something like it was either like learn as you teach and teach as you learn, something like that. And it was around the time where I was just really getting into typography again and just grid and just loving it, really generally, you know, loving typography. And I just kind of started like putting stuff up, but I was like, okay, well, I better try and like sort of showcase some of my expertise. And I'm sure what he meant at the time was like, show your expertise and brand identity so you can get work, not so much show what you can do with type. But long story short, I kind of just started doing it and it really took off. Like people really loved it. And while I was doing it, there weren't many people doing it yet. I think maybe the only other person doing it was Mike Gianda, who's a really lovely guy. And it was cool then because a lot of people from like less developed countries were like, man, you're like really helping me. Like I can't afford to go to university, but like I'm learning all this stuff about typography and about just, you know, color and just, you know, grids and stuff like that. And I'd be lying to say that I didn't get off on it. I was like, man, I'm helping all these people. It's really cool. And my following is growing. You know, I'm not going to sit here and act like I didn't like to see my following count go up. You know, I'm a human being too. But after a while, as you know, it just started really just getting super noisy and everyone kind of started looking the same. And I was like, this is like, this is getting a little bit tasteless for me. So I kind of just went back into that we were talking about at the start with the full cycle. And I just kind of started looking at letters individually. Almost like an elastic way of thinking about type. If you think about how we see type now, we have a bit of a type box, we type something in, but like I like to think like how I used to have wood blocks and type as individual pieces and I can make one bigger than the other. And that's kind of how I started coming up with my stuff. And you know, the people that a lot of them still do come to me for advice and about type and whatever, design or career-wise, they started sort of fluctuating towards the other accounts. And I felt like, okay, like I'm happy that those people are getting that kind of content already. Like, I think I can kind of like just take a step back and not do this really, because like I never set out to be a teacher, you know, I just kind of did it. And now it's like kind of fun, but in all honesty, man, like it's getting really tedious seeing the carousels. And I enjoyed your podcast. And if whoever's listening, please go check out Connor's podcast. I'm sure it was a couple podcasts back on carousel posts.
The educational content one.
Yeah. It was really good. And it was around the time where you're telling me that we're going to do a podcast together. And I was like, man, like, this dude's he's really got it right. And my only tip for people doing carousel posts now would be to make sure that like whatever they're saying on those posts, that the expertise that they're trying to build is based off reality and not reality. Like, because one day someone's going to want to hire you for that expertise. And if you can't show that, if you can't show that you know how to deliver what you're saying, then it's going to be a problem. Like, and that's my only really tip for people. I'm happy that people do it because I understand they're just trying to get theirs. They're trying to grow their accounts. They're trying to become known and all this kind of stuff and help people too. But that's my only real, like, you know, gripe with it is that people kind of like, say stuff that they really don't know what they're talking about. And I understand, man. I understand that people want to act like they know what they're talking about because really people are just trying to like get ahead in life and that's cool. But, you know, just think about it like that. Make sure that whatever you're building is based off reality and that one day someone is going to come hire you. So you better really be able to get after it that way, because if you can't, it's going to be embarrassing for you. And, you know, so yeah, that's my, yeah. Own, it's my little thing on it. So
it totally makes sense. And the reason I like your stuff so much, John, is because it is very much you. I know when it comes up in my feed that it's you. And I think that, many people are just not doing that. They're not exploring the layout system, the grid system. It's more of a case of have an idea, slap it down, get it together. And that's fine. Like, you can do that. I know Chris does that. Chris has 25 plus years of doing layouts. Or, sorry, 20, 25 years of doing layouts. And he's done it since pretty much day one of his graphic design career. So he can do it without actual grid lines. He can just set it out and get it going.
But yeah, for sure.
For the vast majority of people, it's finding the balance between, is this what I want like, is this going to get me what I want? If you want to build an audience of designers, then yeah, go for it. And as I said on the podcast that I did, which if anyone would like to check it out, is episode 36. The thing that I found annoying is more that, as I said on that show, people doing things like 10 quotes from famous designers, and then they do like nine quotes from designers or 10 quotes from designers, and then the final slide is, please hire me for logo design. And I'm like, you clearly have no idea what you're doing.
It's bad, man. It's bad.
And it's sad more than anything, because it just, as you say, it's more of a case of they're doing it for the attention but not really knowing the purpose. And also, obviously everyone starts somewhere, so that's fine. But one of the reasons I think you should check out John's content is because it is very much him. It's very much tailored and unique in that fashion, not just for the content and the wording and the way it's written, but just for the layout you can see. I mean, I'm looking at a post from October, the one you did with the, did you improve today, with all the question marks and the rotated grid lines.
Oh, yeah.
And it's unusual. It's unusual. It's really unusual. And it's not something that you would see anywhere else, or I've not seen in very many places. There are a few people who do poster type posts, as in daily posters, who, like Roy Cranston, he has a similar style sometimes. But I know when John's content comes up that it's going to be interesting, helpful, and unusual and pretty. Like, that's just going to be the way it is. And I think that's what's missing, is this desire to not just show your knowledge and share your knowledge, but also create something that is you. Because obviously to be unique, you have to make a lot of things, but you have to push the boundary somewhere. And I think many, particularly logo and brand identity designers, are trying to get really good at making presentation decks and not very good at doing layouts, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's natural. I mean, and look, man, thank you so much for that awesome compliment. I really appreciate it.
It's no problem.
When I was seeing the whole thing blow up, I kind of just like looked at everything and I thought, I think I'm just gonna go like completely the opposite direction. And just because it feels right for me, you know, I would never say to someone like, you have to be better at type to be cool or to be different. Like, I just saw what I saw and I'm like, I don't want to be like everyone else. I feel stupid being and doing everything like everyone else. And not to say that what everyone else is doing isn't cool, because I have a lot of friends that do it. Like, I genuinely, man, like, made a lot of cool friends, you know, like people that are cool that write to me. I'm hopping on a call with a friend in a few days. Like, you know, I mean, you're a human being. How many friends do you have in real life? You know what I mean? Like, not many, I'm assuming, just like me, you know. So it's cool to connect with people. But before I get sidetracked again, because that's probably the premise of my talking, getting sidetracked. Yeah, just try to be different. Try to be yourself. Just really try to be yourself, and it will be cool, because you're cool if you be yourself, I reckon. As you're cool, man. I love your stuff too. You know, how you've niched really deeply in the CBD, the cannabis stuff. I think that's really smart, because not anyone's really doing it. It's beautiful work, and you're probably going to build a really good career for yourself in that side of it, because a lot of brands are coming up. So
fingers crossed, that's the hope. Yeah, now, man. Say, John, thank you very much for coming onto the podcast today. I really appreciate it. We're going to wrap up there. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at www.judaispunkco.com, which is my website. And you can also find me on Instagram, John Bresciani Design.
Fabulous. Those links will be down in the description today, guys. And if you've enjoyed today's show and can leave us a 5-star review, that would be amazing. So that's you, Apple Podcast listeners, would really appreciate it. And yeah, check out the link in description as well for the Typography 01 course. I'll be putting my affiliate link in there because, haha, I want money. No, I'm kidding. I think you guys should really go and check out that course. It's an amazing Well, it's one of my favorites that Chris has done over at the Future, and obviously John has can attest to its quality too. You can also get 2 free months of Skillshare by using the link in description too. That's skl.sh/cfowlerdesign. And as always, we'll be back same time next week. New guest, maybe a solo episode. We'll see. 2020 is getting off to a really good start. So hope to see you there and speak to you soon. Bye for now.